Hello and welcome to The Bitter End with me, Todd Jordan.
And me, Tom Denny.
Because this episode is live and in person for an audience of two. Me and Tom back together again in the same room.
It's been a hell of a year, but we're back. Staring into those piercing eyes, talking about demo films, drinking them tins of beer while we do it. Oh my God.
It's so genuinely emotional, listeners. I cannot stress it enough. Me and Tom have not done one of these without Zoom in over a year. We are currently, at the time that you are listening to this, we are sort of starting to ease lockdown. We're not breaking restrictions, I promise. We're both vaccinated. Everything is coming up Milhouse for the boys. And I feel very warm. I feel very happy.
Me too, man. It's been too long, and I'm so pleased to be here. You know, saying that we haven't been able to do this in person for a year, I mean, yeah, that sucks. We've only watched three films in an entire year in this, the wrap-up episode, the bitter end of the Beastmaster franchise, but still, I mean, I've missed those three in-person film watches.
Me too, and I feel like the universe owes us those. This is the shortest franchise I think we've ever done.
And yet it's the longest.
The longest. And yeah, but we still have an awful lot to talk about. Because listeners, this is the franchise wrap-up episode. If you're new to the show, you may not know, we do this at the end of every season. We're going to look back on the highs and the lows and the in-betweenies of the franchise, as well as talking about all of the cultural ripples above and beyond the initial three Beastmaster movies. And at the end of the show, we will reveal the topic for our next season.
Ooh, well, that's exciting. That will probably take us 2 years to do.
One movie. But, yeah.
Strap in for that one, folks. But first, the matter at hand, the Beastmaster franchise.
The Master of the Beasts.
As he's known to some. Everybody he meets, apparently, no one will call him Beastmaster. I mean, you know, we thought, let's dip our toes in with a bit of swords and sandals, swords and sorcery, swords and meerkat, no, whatever they were.
Ferrets?
Ferrets. Painted tigers, loincloths, bit of high fantasy, three films, how bad could it be? It was all right.
That's kind of the thing. It was like, it was all right. And if I had a complaint, I suppose it would be that I wish the lows were lower. Because there are some good moments in it. The thing that brought me to the franchise was Don Coscarelli. Mm-hmm. You know, we were coming in hot off the back of our Phantasm season, which I really loved. And Don Coscarelli is just such a weirdo, visionary guy. I really wanted to see him do mainstream. Thing is, he doesn't really stick around very long.
No.
He does that first movie and then the others kind of roll on without him.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of like, yes, I was interested in that. And I was also interested in Beastmaster 2 through the Portal of Time because he goes to gnarly LA in the 1990s. Just what a leap. To have been a fly on the wall in that boardroom when that kind of got pitched out. But like, I think the Don Coscarelli film, it's like visually great. Like,
yeah,
awesome kind of like set design. There's like great like hints at world building in terms of like all the weird shit that's going on and the weird creatures, and like it's like a lot of vignettes rather than like a big story. Like Dar walks around for a long time and then some cool shit will happen, but then it's all kind of a bit of a distraction. And what I would have liked was more of that world, more of the weirdness, more like a bit more dense lore, but I just don't think they could do it. I don't think they had the money.
Yeah, I like the world that Dar lives in. I just don't think I care for Dar.
Yeah, he's a bit of an odd main character because, like,
he has no traits.
I mean, other than being the Master of the Beast,
which he never really uses.
And he kind of loses some of his trait. Well, it's quite good that he loses the trait of being like a pervy creeper, which he is in the first film, where he just like forces himself on a woman by like doing an elaborate prank with his like painted tiger
and his sex ferrets.
I'm glad that that trait went, but then it was just like his trait was just like he became just a fucking idiot by the third film. He was just there to annoy the Candyman.
Do you think he stops being such a horn dog because the only beast he is ever truly able to master is the beast within?
I don't know. Has he mastered the beast within, though? Has he really?
Well, he stops being quite such a pervo, at least.
At least there's that.
Yeah. The thing that is leaving a slight bitter taste in my mouth is Beastmaster 3, Through mm-hmm. the Eye of Braxis, which is just, it's so close to the first film and yet is completely... It wasn't even that long ago we watched it. I can remember very, very little of it.
Yeah, there's... Oh.
It hasn't lodged itself in the old ivory dome.
No, there's like a big rubber monster in it.
I remember him. He was great.
And then the circus appears at some point. But mostly it's kind of like a sitcom where Dar and the Candyman go for a walk and just get endlessly frustrated with one another.
And I feel that as an audience member. Right?
I kind of wondered why the Beastmaster kind of got made to begin with. Because I just assumed that it was like made off the back of Conan the Barbarian with Arnold Schwarzenegger being a hit, but it actually came out the same year.
Huh, okay. Well, maybe it's like a kind of a Dante's Peak and what's the other one? Volcano kind of thing where they race out.
Ants and a Bug's Life.
Exactly. Because it's interesting to me that we've never really done fantasy before, because obviously fantasy is a huge genre, but when I think about it, that I can't think of that many cinematic fantasy franchises. You got Lord of the Rings,
yep,
which we're not doing.
Nope. And then there is like the Conan, like, but
there's
even
Conan.
Like, Conan was like, and that was only like two films, and then they did a reboot.
Red Sonja as well, right? Isn't that
Red Sonja, I think kind of, yeah, but like
That's it.
But maybe, I don't know, I wonder if like this was made like beginning of the 80s, if like, oh, so beginning of the 80s, or like in the late 70s, it was just like fantasy novels and like the, you know, it was Conan books and like Conan comics were like quite a long running thing. Dungeons and Dragons, like in like the first trailer we watched for the Beastmaster, they referenced Dungeons and, you know, a world of Dungeons and Dragons. There's not, well, there's maybe a dungeon.
Yeah.
There's no fucking dragons in this thing.
I don't think so.
But like whether or not it was just like kind of like, people are kind of into fantasy, I guess, and it's cheaper to do than trying to do like a sci-fi film.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe these things do come cyclical, because I feel like now, fantasy in a post Game of Thrones world, fantasy is like cool again.
Mm.
You know, and because there was definitely a long period of time when it wasn't, and maybe just a tiny blip when it was. But like now, there's like a real purple patch for fantasy, and it feels like people are kind of, you know, excited about it.
I think maybe like with fantasy, that there's a kind of like, I mean, I haven't watched Game of Thrones, but I don't think from what I know, it's got like dragons and armies and kind of like that kind of shit that people like, but like I think people generally get a bit put off by like fantasy being like it's all goblins and, you know, like,
yeah,
that there's a line with fantasy where it's kind of like, right, knights and dragons and people being tough, and then when it goes into like fantasy creatures and stuff like that, I think maybe people start getting a little bit like, oh, we're just talking about elves just a little bit too much.
Yeah.
And it's not everyone's cup of tea. There's a bit of like that in Beastmaster. You get the cool fleshy vulture bird men. You get Dar's auntie, who's a troll, who's in a swamp.
Fucking hell, I forgot about that.
There's like witches and stuff like that, but I don't think this is a kind of like weird. This is like Conan. It's like barbarian fantasy. Dar is, he is a big brute of a man in a pair of pants, saving women in bras. It's very like, it's Frank Frazetta fantasy.
Yeah.
It's not Tolkien fantasy. It's not gnomes sitting around singing loads of fucking songs
You
know, two pages about like the fucking smoke rings that they were blowing out their long pipes. It's not that, right?
Well, we talked about this a little bit on episode one about how I was saying when I was a kid, I would occasionally decide I wanted to get into fantasy. And then like, I would try and engage with it. And it was never what I thought it was going to be. And it's obviously such a big rainbow. And if you listening to this listener now are like a huge Fant head, then like this isn't in any way a dig. Like I'm into lots of it, and there's something there for everybody, I think. But for me as a kid, what I wanted was axes, blood on the stone of a dungeon floor, cool monsters, like a Minotaur.
You wanted the box art for Hero Quest.
That is 100% what I wanted. Yeah. And the thing that always puts me off fantasy, or at least did when I was a kid, is a lot of it seems to be about politics. Now, I have no problem with politics, but that's not what I go to fantasy for.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that. I don't really like when it's like, oh, I've got to know all this royalty. Like, who's the king? Who's the king's kids?
Yeah, I think like fantasy world building can be equally like really fun and really interesting, can also be an absolute like chore.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I was like, I want to know about the weird, cool stuff. I don't want to know about like, so like the 300 years that led up to this and like all the kings and the pantheon of gods and all that kind of shit. It's like, can you tell me more about the flesh bird people?
Right.
Can you expand upon the devil dogs that appeared for like a minute in Beastmaster 2 and, you know, like stuff like...
But this is so funny because you were just saying what puts people off of fantasy sometimes is all the crazy monsters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's what you're loving, man.
That's kind of what I want, yeah. I mean, yeah, for me, more crazy monsters, please.
Less humans doing human
Less
shit.
Less humans, right?
I think we can all agree that's probably a good rule for the world.
Yeah, definitely. And if you're going to put humans in it, do what they did with Riptorn and put, like, for some reason, a giant nose on him. I don't know. Like, I guess Riptorn just showed up to set one day and he had a big nose stuck on and everyone was like, okay, makes sense to me.
Why not? But yeah, it's been cool dipping into it. And as you said, it's a bit of a literary genre and definitely one that we've not dove into so much. So I do believe, Tom, that the Beastmaster is based on a book. Is this accurate information?
It is very much so based on a book. So let me lay it on you, because I read/listened to the novel, The Ball That Started It All, of Beastmaster.
Oh, beautiful.
As I was like saying earlier, like just throwing out there that maybe making this fantasy film was cheaper than making a sci-fi story. The Beastmaster book is a sci-fi book.
In what way?
In that it's set on an alien planet in the future and people fly through space in spaceships.
Oh, holy shit.
Yeah. So the book was written in 1959 by Andre Norton, real name Alice Norton.
So by a lady?
A lady. Mm. A lady science fiction writer who actually, by the sounds of it, like was very prolific and quite well thought of, but like it was, you know, this is like 59, so this is like real pulp kind of stuff. So if you go and look up some of like search for the novel and like do like an image search, like there's some cool like pulpy covers. One of them is like of like an old-fashionedy like cone rocket ship and like a spaceman pointing a laser at a dinosaur.
Oh, are there dinosaurs in the book?
There are giant big lizards that live on the planet. So it's called The Beastmaster, and that's kind of where the similarities end. So Andre Norton like took her name off of the first film because so many liberties were taken with the source material that it bears no resemblance pretty much whatsoever. And I think that the name was put back on the later films because people were like, you put your name on, like it might maybe sell some books or whatever.
Right.
So we don't follow Dar, we follow Holstein Storm, who is a Navajo soldier from Earth and a Beastmaster. And a Beastmaster is like a military rank, like part of like a military division. And he has still the sort of like a similar set of animals. None of them have the same names. So instead of the ferrets, you have two meerkats.
Okay.
Who have very much the same traits.
And they're called Andre and Sergey?
Yes. Yes.
They sell car insurance?
They sell car insurance. But then one of them does die, like in the film and like in those adverts. Because we all know Sergey's really dead. And instead of like tiger, panther, lion. It's like a desert cat that's been like genetically modified that it's like bigger. So it's now the size of like a tiger. And there's still also like a hawk that's telepathically or something like that. I don't know if it's but it's basically like dude's got some animal powers. He's got his little animal team. And in the army, they would go out and kind of like scout around or like sabotage camps and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And the Earth has been destroyed.
Of course.
And in Alien War with the Zix, those goddamn greasy Zix.
Oh, man, I hate those Zix so much.
So he's one of like the few, there's lots of Earth people out in the universe in this story, but some of them have like, you know, they're third generation Earthling. They've never been to Earth, but he remembers Earth, and everyone's like, ah, this guy's crazy. He remembers Earth, and he's going crazy with the mad Earth crazies. And he goes to this planet called Arzor with a secret plan to kill a man.
I'm intrigued.
And he kind of like connects with, there's like the native race on this planet who are all like 8 foot tall and have goat horns and cat eyes, but have a lot of similarities, I think, in his character's Navajo. And I think there's other similar like Native American things of like bow and arrows and kind of like similar like tribal culture and all that kind of stuff. So he connects really well.
Okay.
And it's a sci-fi film, but then a lot of it involves basically people ranching and driving like herds of horses across this desert planet. So it kind of becomes also like a space western.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's not that interesting.
okay.
And the thing that really bugged me throughout is like, there's this whole like thing, you know, the thing of like, why is he there? He's there to kill this man called Quaid. And his thing, like, he keeps on meeting him and he's really nice, but he never gets a chance to like actually kill him. And he's like, I can't kill him when he's just like buying me a drink. I've got to, you know, manly combat and all this kind of stuff. And then everything goes wrong and they get attacked by a dinosaur. And then there's like some Zix, there's some secret Zix on the planet and he's got to fight them, all this kind of stuff. And then like the reveal at the end is like, it's right until the very end when he's like not Dar, when Storm has been completely fucked up. And then he's like being nursed back to health by the man that he was there to kill. And he's like, I'm going to kill you in bed with a big knife because you killed my father. And it's kind of like, oh no, I didn't kill your father. Your father got killed by a snake. Your granddad who told you about it was just a bit mental. it kind of boils down to, he was told a story about this guy by his granddad, and it turns out his granddad was a bit of like a zealot or something like that, and so he's kind of like, oh, I've just been on this big mission to like kill you, and actually guess I'm not gonna kill you, and like, oh, you hooked up with my mom and now I've got a half brother, I was gonna kill him as well, okay, bye.
Okay, I'm off on his next adventure, I suppose.
Which he did go off on. There was a sequel to it. There was a sequel called Lord of Thunder.
Okay.
Which came out in 1962. And then in 2002, Andre Norton and I think another writer like did like a few other Beastmaster books, but not about Storm, not Dar. Like this was like another person who was a Beastmaster. I'm not going to go and read or listen to those, okay? Like I did my due diligence. The book's okay, but it's kind of like a bit of a ponderous kind of like space...
Not good enough,
Western.
Tom. I'm going to have to pause the record right now and then go off and I will read those books right now and tell you what they're like.
Okay, off you go.
Okay, it's 2.5 months later. They're not very good.
Okay. Well, thanks for clearing that up, buddy. But anyway, that's like the weird start of Beastmaster. And it kind of makes me like, okay, this is... obvious, I don't know, like someone must have picked this up, and like I guess it must have been like maybe like a sci-fi classic-ish, like a pulpy kind of like, oh yeah, Beastmaster, that's kind of fun. But I don't know why someone was like, well, let's develop that. And then it just like, maybe it just went through the ringer so much development that it just turned something completely different. Or they're like, well, we can't go and film it in space. Do like a,
yes.
They were going to really film it in space. They were really going to go to Arzor and do it. But actually like the whole thing is still set in a desert. So you can kind of,
yeah,
you can kind of see it, but then maybe they're just like, well, is it just easier to make loincloths than like futuristic looking, you know, like to make a spaceship set and...
Yeah, I don't...
It's weird just like to take that and turn it into what Beastmaster became.
So you say that obviously the film can't have been like a rip-off or a rush through for Conan because they came out the same year. But what obviously predated the Conan film was the Conan books.
Yes.
So I do know that Don Coscarelli was a big fan since childhood of the Andre Norton Beastmaster novel and also read a butt ton of Conan.
Okay.
So I feel like his kind of nostalgia.
I'm doing a thing where my two hands are coming together and the fingers are interlocking. You can't, but it was that, was it?
Yeah, it was. That's a good gesture, Tom, and thank you for the audio description. I feel like that's what it is. Kind of like Tarantino would do, where he sort of mushes a bunch of stuff he likes together and pretends it's his.
Yeah, and Don Coscarelli's also going, I'm going to put a bit of fetish stuff in there. Right. Also, could someone get born out of a cow? Something for the lads.
Very specific thing. So I feel like, you know, maybe it's Beastmaster in name only, but also it's probably got some of that kind of... you know, that ripping yarn feel.
At the core of it, it's about, like, this person with this, like, team of animals that they control. And I think that is still quite a fun idea.
Yeah, it is a fun idea. And I wonder why I find it disappointing in execution, because I don't think that it's done badly. But I think in my mind it's a more of a fun idea than it is.
So, yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. Like, would this be more fun? Like, it's obviously made with, like, the limitations of using real-life animals. So they can only do so much.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things where, like, the tiger will kill somebody off-screen and then you'll just see it sat down somewhere.
Well, do you know why the black tiger didn't come back?
Killed someone?
You're not a million miles off. This is kind of a sad story. I'm about to bum you out.
Oh, time. Okay. I mean, it's been a tough year. I mean, fucking...
Turns out the tiger was allergic to the dye that they used, and the tiger died.
Oh, my God. It got air buds in space.
Yeah. Which is kind of awful.
Yeah, so that's awful.
That's why from then on, they're like, yeah, we're not dying it anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I always thought, like, the process of dying a tiger seems like... I mean, like... Whose first job in Hollywood is that?
Yeah, I found this out by accident when I was just trying to look up some facts about Beastmaster. And you know how, like, Google recommends, oh, we think you're asking this question, and you get those little questions in the drop-downs. Yeah. The question that it thought I was asking was, did the tiger from Beastmaster really died?
Did it died?
And it did died. It died because it got died. Oh, they died it, so it died.
It got died to dead. Oh, man.
We shouldn't be laughing about that.
No, that's a massive bummer. But, I mean, that's kind of like this film can't really be made now, because I don't think people would be cool with doing a film that uses that much in the way of, like, live animal actors, especially, like, a tiger or a lion. And now people would do it with CG. And I think if you did it with CG, you could get much more of, like, the whiz-bang dynamic action that I think we probably feel that, you know, like, the premise of guy with some animals, oh, that would be cool. But then also, like, it just kind of takes the weight out of it that you know that it's not real.
Is it just me, or are movies that are fundamentally, like, about people interacting with animals a lot, are they doomed? Like, I'm trying, because there's, like, Dr. Doolittle, which is always tanked whenever they've tried to make it.
I mean, from what I hear of that film, I don't think it was just the problem that the animals were CGI. I think literally everything about it was bad. But there was that one where, like, Harrison Ford hangs out with a cartoon dog and is sad, or what, you know, like, there's been a bunch of these films. And I do think that it is a wall. It's the uncanny valley. And you kind of... Maybe if the animals talked, if it was like a His Dark Materials kind of thing, because with that,
right,
fantasy, talking animals, I'm not worrying about it. Like, I'm like,
yeah,
it's like that much more heightened. So I know that it's meant to be fake because it's speaking and...
Yeah, and that's like the perfect example, I think.
I mean, I guess Dr. Doolittle, he's talking to the animals. Maybe that's just a shit film. But, like, yeah, like, the idea of, like... Yeah.
Who's to say, Tom?
Rather than, like, Harrison
because
Ford...
Because I'm never going to watch this.
Yeah, exactly. Rather than, like, Harrison Ford interacting with this, like, you know, like, sad dog. And there was some other film that came out very recently that was, like, an adapted thing of, like, a book about... A famous book about a plucky dog. Right. And it just looked a little bit cartoony and weird. If the dog was walking around... being like, hey, anyone got some bones? Then, like, then suddenly you're just like a much more on, you know, you're kind of like, that's perfect. Is it taking me out of the, slightly out more out of the Uncanny Valley?
This is where the Yogi Bear movie is your favourite movie of all time.
And I've never seen it and I'm never going to.
Because why spoil the perfect idea that you have of it?
The best Yogi Bear film is Yogi's First Christmas. And even that, I went back and started rewatching that last Christmas and I turned it off because I was just a bit like...
too emotional?
Yeah, too emotional. No, I sat down to try and watch it with my daughter and was like, this would be great. This is like something that I like really, you know, remember from my childhood. And I was kind of like, oh, I think she's just feeling bored by this because even I'm feeling bored and all I'm doing is spotting the animation inconsistencies.
Yeah, I think, you know what, Todd? I think you're a good dad for having turned that off.
Thanks, Todd. Thanks.
Well, okay, that is the book, the Beastmaster book, right? It sounds interesting. Thank you for going the extra mile and reading it to the bitter end.
No problem. Now, I don't think the book's the only thing. So, look, Beastmaster franchise, you don't have the video games and the comic books.
Yeah, you really don't.
With this one. I've seen online there's some a few, like, fan-made toys where people have, like, hand-sculpted or, like, you know, modified toys to look like Dar and, like, those, like, bondage BDSM guys. That's pretty cool. But the big thing that this does have is a TV show.
Three seasons from the late 90s. Looks sci-fi channel as hell. Not sure if it is or isn't. With a different dude playing Dar. Although Mark Singer does show up later on in it, supposedly. As a little guest, but not as Dar or a relation of Dar. He's just in it.
Yeah. He's just, yeah, just some dude. But we went and watched the first episode, episode one, season one of The Beastmaster, the TV series, starting in 1999.
Yes, this is an episode called The Legend Continues, which is a bold title for the first episode of your TV show.
Well, it's quite weird. Like, just that title, there's a bit in it where somebody, like, kind of tells you what Dar's backstory is. And so I was thinking, like... is this meant to be, like, canonically following on from the events of, like, the Eye of Braxis? But I don't think it... I think it's kind of... like, I think it's a soft sequel slash reboot. Like, I think it's kind of, like, meant to be, like, he's been on these adventures. Maybe those things are canon. But if you go back and look, don't do that because you'll find out they're not canon.
Yeah.
No. But we're going to say that it is. Because who's gone and dug out a copy of Eye of Braxis 3? No one's going to watch that.
Oh dear, Tom. Oh dear. We are the outlier.
Yeah. Well, they weren't thinking about us in 1999, were they?
Nobody was. I was not even thinking about us. And I was there. So this TV show, man, it's...
Give us your unfiltered opinion of this, Todd.
Bad.
Yeah, it's pretty shit, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's hella boring.
Now, I do feel like that was probably all TV in the late 90s.
Yeah, I feel like that we're watching this now, and it's like, it's not the golden age of television.
Like, I watch more TV nowadays than I did back then, mm-hmm. and I think for a reason, and that reason is shit like this.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have the, it. I mean, off of one episode, it doesn't seem to have the acting, the sort of writing or the production values of something at the, you know, that was going on at the time that you would maybe remember. Like, I never really watched Xena Warrior Princess, but people remember that, like, Buffy the Vampire Slayer still kind of stands up because people in it can act and there's, like, decent writing.
Yeah.
And, you know, the design of it can look kind of hokey, but it kind of works. This is just kind of... nothing, really.
Yeah.
It's just...
I agree with you. which is a shame because I really wanted to like this. It starts with our new Dar, and he's like on a clifftop, and his eagle gives him a psychic vision of a lady being kidnapped by some barbarians. And then he does the fugitive waterfall jump where he just jumps off a waterfall. Don't think he needed to. And then we've got some men with like bones glued to their leather armor.
Yeah, like men that should look like gnarly, ghoulish barbarians, but they look like they're wearing really cheap Halloween costumes. And the whole episode is him chasing after these soldiers who have this this woman who is Dar's true love. Kira. And it's just like sequence of things of him like nearly getting there, and then they fuck off before Dar gets there, and then he has to chase them some more. And it's kind of that.
Yeah, it's kind of that. Like, we get a little bit of additional backstory. So there's King Zaz is the baddie. Is it Zaz? Zad?
Zad? Zad, maybe?
Yeah, he's the baddie. He's got all these people in this like Thunderdome, because he wants to teach his tiger how to fight. So he's feeding slaves to it. I think the tiger knows how to fight, mate. I think he's probably fine.
Maybe it was a very domesticated tiger and they're trying to reintroduce it to the wild.
Yeah, maybe. And then he meets this like nerdy guy called Tao, who's like a scientist.
He saves him from the tiger and fights some guards. He kind of controls the tiger, or he communes with the tiger. And he saves this one guy, and then everyone else escapes.
Yeah.
With his true lady love. And then he's like, damn you!
Yeah. And, you know, we get like some interesting sort of background when they're chatting. So we learn that like the ferrets have their own backstory. They were thrown out of their tribe for being mischievous.
Right? They're imagine bad
being,
lads.
Imagine being so mischievous you get thrown out of a ferret tribe.
Right? We also learn that Dar's eagle, Shirak, is immortal.
Yeah, because the sorcerer took away his ability to die.
Which is kind of, you know, terrifying for Shirak, but also like kind of like, okay, interesting wrinkle. We're introduced to like this weird kind of very theatrical sorcerer who
I've written her down in my notes as the MILF witch.
Yes, who also talks to this person in old makeup, who I thought was like meant to be old lady makeup, and then I think is maybe a dude, but I'm also not sure.
Yes, I wrote this down as well. It feels like they've kind of deliberately made this character quite androgynous.
Yeah.
Who is this sort of weird old advisor who advises, as you would, the MILF witch. And there's this amazing bit where the advisor, like, quotes Shakespeare, says, all the world's a stage. And the MILF witch says, that's an interesting thought. And the advisor says, well, it hasn't been written yet. Which means, so this is Earth, and the advisor knows that Shakespeare is going to write.
Unless this this other kind of advisor is aware of the portal through time.
which was categorically not a portal through time.
So I think I wrote a note here while watching this. I just feel like it just feels at any moment during this show, it's so badly acted and the sets are so cheap and the costumes are so cheap and so skimpy. At any moment, I would not be surprised if it descended into pornography.
Yes!
It all feels like a 5-minute preamble to porn.
Yeah, there's a bit where like King Zad makes Kira,
this is horrible.
Do like a sexy dance in his tent or something, right?
Yeah, he gets to do a sexy dance and then, you know, instead of it like take, but then it becomes like, he's just kind of like, they have this argument where he's basically saying like, you're my slave and I can basically do whatever I want with you. And it's quite uncomfortable and unpleasant.
Yeah. But there's even more moments like this as well. We get a section where Dar and Tal stumble across what I've written down in my notes as the Horn Dog Pagoda, which is a big pagoda full of naked bathing beauties.
This feels like it's a reference to the first film.
Because his ferret steals their clothes.
I know.
And they meet a helpful naked lady who turns out to secretly have been been the MILF witch all along.
Sends Dar into this pagoda. It catches fire. He falls over. The tiger walks in, roars. Dar gets up, walks out. What an amazing action scene.
You missed, Thomas, the screaming CGI fire Pokemon.
Oh, my God.
It's a Pokemon.
Yes, it is. I think it's later described by his scientist friend as a chimera. It absolutely fucking is not. That's like a fantasy, like, lion, goat, snake, winged hybrid. This is a Pokemon. This is, like, made out of, like, sludge and smoke and breathed CGI fire. And when this came on, I snapped into focus. I was like, it was the best 2 minutes in this fucking endless 42-minute long episode.
Yeah, it did drag, but this monster is quite good.
And it comes back for a final fight with Dar, so that's not all bad.
And in the run-up to the fight with Dar, knowing that he's going to have to fight this fire Pokemon, his mate Tao is like, oh, don't worry, I've got something that's good for fire. So he's like, oh, well, I'm a scientist. He's like, I've got, like, fire protection. He rubs these leaves together and he makes this goop to, like, cover all over Dar's skin. And he's like, oh, yeah, this is something that I learned from an old Zambezi woman. I call it Tao's magic. Now, she taught you that magic. You can't just name it after yourself. It's like, oh, I read in a recipe book, like, how to make a particular kind of pie. I call it Todd's pie. Like, well, I don't think you can do that, actually, Todd. You know, it's an existing thing. Yeah. But also an old Zambezi woman. So again, the Zambezi, I think, is my cursory geography. That's a river or a body of water somewhere in the African continent, I think. So again, more signs that this is Earth.
Huh.
And perhaps relatively modern if the names of the places are the same.
Like, well, we'll never know because I'm never watching another episode of this thing.
Yeah, I absolutely will not.
I think that maybe, like, the storyline of this is that Dar's kind of, like, trying to save his family who are magically imprisoned in some crystals. I don't fucking know. I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, I was right at the end and I was literally just, like, watching Dar with his anti-fire magic called Tao's magic. Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely not from that Zambezi woman. It's all over his body. He's fighting this monster. And this should be cool. And I'm looking at it and I'm just like going, end. Hurry up and end. Yeah. Like, I spent more time watching that, like, the progress bar on the video than I did watching the action. And yeah, it ends. He stabs it and it dies. And then, oh no, his girlfriend's getting carried away on a horse. And he's like, I will find you. End.
Jolly good. I mean,
I feel like that's going to be every episode, right?
Yeah. I mean, first episodes of any TV series are generally pretty rough. There's a lot of, like, heavy lifting to do to get you into the story. But yeah, I still don't hold out hope that this gets much better. Like, first and foremost, it's hindered by no one being able to act.
No one can act except for the guy playing King Zad, the big baddie, who's in, like, one scene, which is this incredibly awkward, like, sexual exploitation scene. But he really reminded me of the baddie from Highlander Endgame. Who was, like,
Michael Ironside?
No. Maybe I don't mean Endgame. The one.
Oh no, sorry. No, that was the first
Sci-Fi Channel ones.
Oh,
possibly,
sorry. Yeah.
Where there was that guy who's, like, just, like, dripping with evil, and he's like,
"Yes, that bald
your
guy.
True fear, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Ooh. I'm a bad lad. He really reminded me of that.
Yes. I wouldn't say he was, like, a good actor. But he was certainly leaving it all out on the field, wasn't he? And, you know, that's sometimes all you need to shine above the rest.
Yeah.
So there you go. I mean, I think it's a two thumbs down from us at the Bitter End. I'd say read the book first.
Yeah. Whoa, and you did not love the book.
I didn't love the book, but it was, you know, more moderately interesting, I suppose.
But enough about the past of the Beastmaster, Tom. What about the future?
There's a future?
There might be. And it's potentially quite interesting because Big Donnie C, Donnie Cosco, Mr. Phantasm, Mr. Beastmaster himself, has finally got the rights reverted back to him. So he is supposedly putting together what he's describing as a big screen reboot. So this will be a feature film. He specifically says reboot.
Okay, yeah.
Don't know. So maybe it's not Beastmaster 4. Maybe it's Beastmaster 1.
It feels like now is the time for a fresh start, right?
Yeah, that would be good. And I've liked a lot of Don Coscarelli's more modern output as well. So I feel like if he had a second swing at the Beastmaster, he'd probably do a lot better than he did the first time.
I mean, he'd do something interesting. I think the first Beastmaster is interesting anyway. I think it suffers from, like, pace, like, more than anything. So, like, a slightly more jazzy, fast, modern-edited Beastmaster film, I'd show up.
Who do you want to play Dar in the new Beastmaster? Who's your pick?
God, I don't know. That is a tough one. Because he's kind of like the original Dar. He's kind of cut, but he's not like... He's not a Schwarzenegger or a kind of like... He's not like rippling. I kind of like that he's a little bit more kind of wiry.
Yeah, I agree with you. I pick Martin Short, you know, from the Three Amigos. That's who I want.
70-something-year-old Martin Short. Yeah. Yeah, do that.
That's what I want. That's who I pick.
All I can think of is, like, the only thing I know that Martin Short's done recently is he voiced the Cat in the Hat in a Cat in the Hat cartoon series.
Fine.
So I'm just like,
so the dude can work with animals.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, hello. Would you come on an adventure with me and my magical animals? Your mother will not mind at all if you do. Okay, well, if you got my money.
Well, good, because I don't know. I think that sounds great, but there's more going on in the Coscarelli camp. Because,
say what?
Well, the future of the original Beastmaster is called into question.
Oh.
Because Don Coscarelli is launching a campaign to try and recover the original negative of the Beastmaster for a fancy new restoration.
Okay.
Yeah, because here's what happened. He says, and I quote, listener, you've got to imagine my quote fingers lurking on either side of your headphones while you listen to this. Donnie Cosco says, the rights holder, the old rights holder, not him, the rights holder sent some guy to pick up the film negative.
Damn that guy.
And he stuck it in his vault, then sold the house. Now he says he doesn't know where it is.
Oh, no.
Yeah. This is, decades later. So Cosco, Donnie Cosco, has launched a website called whereisthebeastmaster.com, which you can go to with a big banner saying, be the hero. And he is calling for tips from the general public as to where this negative is, because he thinks that a collector has gotten hold of it. He thinks somebody bought that house,
yep,
prized open this vault, found the negative for the Beastmaster in it, and basically sold it, probably.
Right, and so someone must have it.
Some super fan is sitting on it, because he says he knows that there is an entire generation of Americans who grew up watching the Beastmaster maybe kinda every day.
Yeah, so apparently it was just run in syndication. Like, I think I has read something like the channel. There was like one specific channel that ran it again and again and again and again, and that people would call it the Beastmaster channel.
Yes, there's an old Billy Crystal joke that HBO stands for Hey Beastmaster's On. And yeah, so Don Coscarelli says, like, specifically the time it was on as well, it was a lot of latchkey kids who were coming home from school before their parents got in.
Right, right.
And basically just every day being like, right, I'm home from school, time to watch Beastmaster again. And his theory is that one of these latchkey kids has grown up and gotten hold of the negative and is sitting on it in their private collection. And he's launched this website to appeal to that specific kid. But there's a form where you can give in tips. He knows the town that the house was in.
Right, okay.
Somewhere in California.
Oh, well, good luck, Mr. Coscarelli.
What an amazing story. Yeah. And yeah.
Good viral marketing as well, if they, you know, find it within the reboot. Can you imagine, like, you know, it's that thing of, like, coming home, instead of coming home from, like, school or whatever and watching a 22-minute episode of the Ninja Turtles, you came home from school every day and watched, like, the 90-minute film Beastmaster.
Yeah, with all of, like, the sexy boob witches. And
like the massive explosions at the end. And like, yeah, what? That would be a, yeah.
Different world.
I mean, maybe it explains some things about the world we're living in right now. So, on the subject of the future of Beastmaster, we know then what Don Coscarelli has got in. He's got something planned. He's got something up his Coscarelli sleeve. But the real important question is, what have we got up our sleeves? What would we like to see from the future of the Beastmaster?
Because, yes, this is a tradition amongst us at the bitter end where we like to come up with our own imaginary sequels that never were for these franchises we love so hard. Tom, would you like to go first with your sequel pitch, or would you like me to go first?
I'll go.
I lay it on me, brother. Hit me with your Beastmaster sequel.
Beastmaster. I feel in the tradition of films like Highlander, Police Academy, Rambo, RoboCop. What the Beastmaster really needs is not necessarily another film. What it really needs is an inappropriately pitched animated series.
Ooh.
Now, I'm still pitching out ideas. You know, I'm still brainstorming what we call this. But at the moment, the working title is Beastmaster Babies.
Okay, I love it.
You've heard of the Muppet Babies, right?
I'm familiar with their work.
You've also, you know, maybe there were things like there was Tom and Jerry Kids. There was Popeye and Son. There was that thing of, like, de-aging or having, like, an adjacent younger version of a classic character. Well, it's Dar's turn, baby! So the adventures of Beastmaster Babies is going to follow young Dar and all his animal friends who can now talk because it's a fucking cartoon. And all the crazy antics they have living in that village on stilts from the first film or whatever. We're going to change up some of the continuity slightly. Max is now going to be, he's going to, you know, still be the antagonist, but he's going to be more of a American Dennis the Menace, Mr. Wilson character.
Ooh.
Who lives next door and is always just like, duh, and is always just trying to fucking, like, sacrifice Dar in a flaming pit at the end of every episode. And then, you know, like, Chirac will come down and, like, peck his eyes out, and I don't know, we'll have like some sort of a sassy voice. There's also going to be other antagonists. We'll have Dar's, his brother.
Oh, yeah.
His douchey brother, Wings Hauser.
Oh, Wings Hauser from Wings Hauser of House of Wings.
Yeah, he's going to show up. He's always going to have a scheme going on. He's going to try and sabotage, you know, Dar's starring role in the school play or whatever. Dar's going to maybe live. So I'm not sure where Dar should live. So I'd imagine, like, maybe he's living with his dad, King Zed.
Oh, of course.
His mum. And also his other mum, a cow.
Well, that's a sitcom in and of itself.
Exactly. But then he's also going to go and spend some time with Swamp Auntie. You're just going to bring back all the classic characters. And these characters, I just think, like, all lend themselves so well to be, like, in an animated format. Because obviously, Cow Mum is going to talk as well.
Yeah.
And it's going to be this weird kind of throuple thing going on. And, like, the Swamp Auntie's going to be just, like, a little bit kind of little bit crazy. And I think, like, maybe, Jackie from LA, 1990. She'll come in too, like radical skateboards and backwards baseball caps. She's like going to be the Poochie in this kind of thing. And it's just going to be 52 11-minute episodes. Just fucking rinse that shit. It's going to be just mediocre at best. That's kind of where I think we should go with it.
This sounds phenomenal, Tom. I can picture it. I can hear the voice of Swamp Auntie being like, coming in and saying sassy things like, let me tell you, kid, life don't get any better than chocolate cake. Or something like that. Oh, it's going to be amazing. Low stakes, really, like, lots of reused backgrounds.
All that kind of shit. And then, you know, be like, oh, there's a bear in the school canteen. You're the only person who can solve this problem.
Yeah.
And his wings let the bear in and all that.
He'll learn a lot of lesson, like an episode about telling the truth. And all an that episode stuff.
Could we get the original Beastmaster, live action Beastmaster, to do like an 80s style PSA at the end where he kind of turns around and is like, hey, that was me as a Beastmaster baby. We had a lot of fun in this episode, but you know what's not fun? Crack cocaine. Ask Wings Hauser. Don't have any proof, but my God. That guy ate so much scenery when we start together in Beastmaster 2.
You just made me super nostalgic for Muppet Babies. Do you want to know a fun fact about me and Muppet Babies?
I've never wanted to hear anything more.
I was very well versed with Muppet Babies as a child.
Mm.
Not so with the Muppets, to the point that I did not know the Muppets existed until eventually the one day when I finally saw the Muppets. And I genuinely thought to myself, huh, they've made a grown-up version of the Muppet Babies.
Yes, love it.
Took a long time for those pennies to drop.
Oh, but drop they did. So, did I come up with the same thing as you?
It's not the exact same idea. I will say that the idea you came up with is much, much better than mine, and I'm already ceding defeat. But here is my own personal sequel for The Beastmaster. So, my idea is a straight sequel. Mm-hmm. It can come out now, and it is called Beastmaster 4, Through the Gates of Who Gives a Shit.
Love it.
The movie opens with Darla Beastmaster striding confidently through the desert. All of his animal mates are there. The big cat that changes colour and species and eventually dies. The ferrets that die and then don't die, like Jason Voorhees, and then die. The bird that does all the work. They're all there, Tom. They're all there. But lo, what's this? There's a set of mystical crystal gates standing before Dar in the desert. They are the fabled gates of Who Gives a Shit. Dar knows what he has to do. Grits his teeth, flexes his muscles, and taking his beast with him, he runs bravely through those gates. Where does he end up? Who gives a shit? I literally do not care, because we don't see him again for the rest of the movie. By this point, a maximum of 2 minutes have passed in terms of running time. The remaining 78 minutes of Beastmaster 4 Through the Gates of Who Gives a Shit are filled to the brim with cool, gothic fantasy shit. The kind of thing we normally get tiny, tiny little glimpses of. I'm topping an epic section with the winged devourers going to war against glowing devil dogs being controlled by a butt witch with a skull on her face. I'm talking sacrifices to ancient gods that go horribly wrong and result in twisted monstrosities that humanity was never meant to see. I'm talking spike-covered metal demons grunting their way through a stone labyrinth in pursuit of a badass axe-wielding barbarian final girl. And Dar misses the whole thing! It is absolutely essential to me that Mark Singer still gets paid the same amount he would normally receive for being in a Beastmaster film. But for the benefit of all involved, including us as the viewer, the Beastmaster as a character is not in this film. He is off having an adventure. Where? Through the gates of Who Gives a Shit. And we are all better off as a result.
Love it. I want to see all of those things.
I mean, that's kind of just what I want to see. I've not so much pitched a sequel as a director's cut.
Yeah. So would you actually still film Dar doing something?
Well, no, just let Mark Singer have a day. Like, he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, or like, maybe what I do is like, okay, Mark, what you can do is like go in, you know, do like a black box theatre kind of thing where it's just like a one-man show where like Dar walks out and stops and looks at the audience, go, oh, hi. I didn't see you there. And then he just does a one-man show while, you know, in the back on the soundstage with all the green screen, it's like the winged devourers fighting the devil dogs.
That's all I want to see.
I mean, yeah. Like we said at the top, like, the world building, all the other creatures, can we have more of it, please? Not just Dar in a tiara, occasionally swinging a sword, but never actually killing anyone with it. He's kind of knocking him over.
He's not very good, is he?
He's got a lion to do, or what? He's got something to do all the heavy lifting, right? Anyway, Well, I guess that's the Beastmaster then.
That kind of...
All right, well, that kind of's it. See you later, folks.
That kind of... But no, Tom, because you cannot leave yet.
Okay, I'm sitting
down.
We've
got a little bit more bitter end business still to do.
Bitter biz, as I call it.
Now, cast your mind back, Tom. I'm doing my checklist. We said hello.
Yeah.
We ran through the franchise as a whole.
We did.
We talked about the book.
Mm.
We talked about the TV show.
Mm.
We talked about the Muppet Babies.
We did.
We haven't yet announced what we're going to do for our next season.
We're doing another season?
Of course we're doing another season, because now we can do them in person again.
Oh my God, we've got to try and squeeze this shit in as quickly as we can before everything falls to fuck again.
It's been so long since you and I watched a film together.
I know.
So, what film are we going to watch? Not just one film, but then the three sequels that follow for an entire franchise of four films. Yes, I know, listeners, that it's quite short, but in the current climes, who knows?
Who knows what's going to happen?
Yes, we'll try and do it a little bit quicker than this last season.
I make no promises.
So, four movie franchise. The fourth movie is not yet released at the time of recording this. Perhaps savvy listeners may have been able to figure out what this is. It's going to be... Name him once, name him twice, name him thrice. It is Candyman. Candyman. Candyman.
We're getting set then. We're getting fucking... There's a tie in there, folks.
The actual Tony Todd featured from Beastmaster 3, The Eye of Braxis, as Seth.
In his second most well-known role, the Candyman.
The Candyman, yes.
The Candyman can.
He bloody can. Inspired by the Clive Barker short story. This is the Candyman movie from 1992, which will be followed by Candyman Farewell to the Flesh from 1995, and then 1999's Candyman Day of the Dead. And then eventually to culminate in Candyman from 2021, directed by Nia DaCosta, which is supposedly going to be a sequel to the first film.
Very cool. I'm excited about watching this. You know, we haven't done a horror for a little while.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a big Clive Barker fan. In fact, it's part of the lore of this podcast is that there's a secret sort of season zero that was never recorded, which was basically just you, me, and some friends watching every Hellraiser film.
Oh, yeah. And, like, that shit that he's done is... Some of it's absolutely fucked up. So I'm looking forward to seeing, like, how weird Candyman is. I feel maybe I've seen the first one, but I don't know. I know that there's bees.
Yeah.
That's it.
I've only seen the first one only once, which is surprising. And not for a really, really long time. I know that I really liked it. Yeah, it's got Virginia Madsen in it, who has previously shown up in one of our episodes as the main love interest from Highlander 2.
Ooh, okay. Well, this is all tying together. This is very nice. I'm excited about watching this, folks. Hope that you will be excited to listen along.
Yeah, please do. We're not going to be able to hold ourselves to like a hard and firm schedule. We'll see if we can get them out a little bit more regularly than we have been for this season.
But everyone who's been listening on this most sporadic of seasons, thank you ever so much. It's been good to, you know, hope you've enjoyed the Beastmaster trip.
Yeah, in a very heartfelt way. Thank you all very, very much. And thank you for the messages you've been sending, because you can reach us on Twitter at BitterEndPod. Once in a blue moon, we'll check Facebook, also at Bitter End Pod, but mostly Twitter, if I'm honest. Until then, keep an eye on your feed for when we show up with Candy Man from the Bitter End Podcast. I am Todd Jordan.
I'm Tom Denny. And Todd, it's a very special end of season treat. I know that you were frustrated that the portal of time was not really a portal through time.
It wasn't. It was just, it travelled from one place to another.
So here, a special gift for you. I have got our very own portal through time.
Oh my God, Tom, that's so amazing. That must have cost you so much money.
I mean, not as much as you would think. I don't know why it was going quite cheap, but I don't know where it goes. We'll just have a little look. Just peek through.
Peek through. Where's
the portal of time?
When does it go?
When does it... Oh, it goes to March 2020?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, we'll stay. See you for Candyman.
Bye.
Who can take a sunrise, sprinkle it with dew, cover it in chocolate and a miracle or two? It's the Candyman. The Candyman can. Candyman can. Posse mixes it with love and makes the world taste good.